So this is, I'm reading the last portion of the previous paragraph. The attraction that at the vital level, there is an attraction for suffering. For suffering and unrest. The vital nature by itself is a projection of the vibration of joy. But a perverse savor haunts her thirsting lips. Something is twisted. She loves bitterness, she loves pain, she loves melancholy. There is this aspect in the vital nature of man also. There is a great attachment to pain, which is why we don't come out of it. Yet, the last five lines, yet pure and bright from the timeless was her birth. She is actually an expression of the delight of manifestation. A lost world rapture lingers in her eyes, that sense of perfect ananda. She remembers that at the origin, this is what she was. Why have we moved away from that? Why is there in us this attachment to grief? We don't want to come out of it. A lost world rapture lingers in her eyes. Her moods are faces of the infinite. Beauty and happiness are her native right. An endless bliss is her eternal home. This is what she is, life is, this is what we are. We are the children of joy, of ananda. But somewhere that direct, you might say, acceptance that we are the children of the divine has been forgotten. We often relate to ourselves as children of darkness also. This duality in our nature, we are children of error, we are children of darkness, we are human, we are mortal, and this is what defines us, which is why we do not always relate to that original ananda, which is what we have to go back to. That is what we essentially are. But this world of the world of life is a projection of the energy of the divine. This now revealed its antique face of joy. Ashwapati recognizes this. A sudden disclosure to the heart of grief, tempting it to endure and long and hope, even in the even in changing. Just a second. Even in changing worlds, bereft of peace, in an air racked with sorrow and with fear, and while his feet trod on a soil unsafe, he saw the image of a happier state. This simultaneously, we are within us, living in a world of imperfection, which is why there is grief, there is longing. We might long for joy, the joy we have lost. We long for peace, though we are born of that original divine consciousness. But we are all the time moving in an air racked with sorrow and with fear. We identify ourselves with the lower creation. We identify ourselves with the lower nature. We think of the divine world as something far away, something which is not us. We are part of the lower creation. But he saw the image of a happier state in an architecture of hieratic space. Now this is the vision. this world of perfection in the world of life, not in some world of a silent, remote consciousness. In the world of life, there is the Ananda. He saw this as if there is a kind of a evolution, a kind of a hierarchy, rising from the lesser to the greater, circling and mounting towards creation stops at a blue height which never was too high for warm communion between body and soul, as far as heaven, as near as thought and hope, glimmered the kingdom of a griefless life. This world where there is no pain, this is the world of the vital, the spirits of the vital world have no psychic being. They don't have a psychic being, but they don't have pain either. That world of the spirit, which where you have these intermediary beings like Gandharvas and gods, small and big gods, there is this sense of changelessness. They don't evolve. What does not evolve does not come out of from the lesser to the greater. It stays as it is. These beings are complete, perfect, and therefore griefless. The gods are always described as griefless. They don't long for anything. But in man there is grief. Man longs for something. He feels his imperfection. He feels his insufficiency. I am something and I want to be much more. I have to break out of what I am to become something else. That pulling towards something unknown, something higher, is there. That need to manifest another greater consciousness in the world of life, in the world of personal experience, is also there. But what we often forget is that we have to do it. We do it only in the purely vital way. So I want happiness, I want satisfaction of desire, I want to feel a certain sense of fulfillment. But on the vital plane, I have forgotten that life is an energy that is a creative force that has come out of the Supreme. It is not vital, it is spiritual. That I have forgotten. Joy has to be in my spirit, not in the satisfaction of my desire. That is why it keeps on encircling. I ask for something, I pray, I hope, I dream of something greater. I may get something, but I don't say, I have to change. My starting point has to change. Instead of being somebody who is settled in the vital, I have to move towards a deeper inner spiritual consciousness, which is behind the vital, behind the heart center. You have the psychic. From there, we get all connections with the higher world. Therefore, it keeps on circling because desire never ends. One desire is followed by another. At a blue height, which never was too high, for warm communion between body and soul. It is not that kind of life which the Rishi has. He withdraws into a highest level of consciousness of Satchitananda. No, he wants to live this life of beauty and love and harmony. So there's a communion between body and soul. This is our base. So Ashwapati is passing through this vital world. And in its essence, it is a manifestation of the possibilities of perfection in the world of life. As far as heaven, as near as thought and hope. It's something perfect, so you call it heaven. But we can hope, and which is why man keeps on hoping that someday my life will become not better, it will become perfect. But we never remember that to make our life better, we have to change. Our nature has to change. It's not that I will be given a beautiful life. I cannot live a beautiful life unless I become beautiful from within. I remove from within all the demands, all the passions, all the pulls of the ego. This, until this is done, the manifestation will always be incomplete. So as he moves into this world, above him, in a new celestial vault, because you get the sense of spirals, circlings. Therefore the vault. Vault is the rounded ceiling on top. Other than the heavens beheld by mortal eyes. Usually this is what we may call heaven. When we speak of heaven, we speak of a world which is beautiful, where there is no suffering. The first condition is, in heaven there is no pain. That's our idea of heaven. But we have to deserve it. We cannot just enter into a world of grieflessness, remaining all the time the same kind of person that we were, remaining impure, small, petty, egoistic. How can we live that kind of life? We have to change. That's why it is other than the heavens beheld by mortal eyes, as on a fretted ceiling of the gods. So it is as if you get the sense of something coming down from a world above ours, where there is a kind of opening, like a ceiling which is not completely closed. Openings through which, like inrushes, if there is a fretted ceiling, rain and sun can come into my life. So in man, man's life is not blocked. It is not that we reach a vital plane and it is closed. There are openings to higher planes. A fretted ceiling of the gods, an archipelago of laughter and fire, swam stars apart in a rippled sea of sky. This is a kind of a new geography. Stars shine in the dark. In the ocean of time, in the ocean of space, like sky, there are moments of light. The archipelago, you know what an archipelago is, isn't it? Collection of islands. Islands that are separate and yet they are separate but groups. Several groups of islands, like you might say like Japan, it's made up of four islands. It's an archipelago. It's one and yet not one. It is different. So the vital world is always filled with new possibilities, new manifestations can express itself. He says, an archipelago which is constantly variable of laughter of fire, intensity of joy, of pleasure, of happiness. They swam in that space above the earthly life. This is another kind of, above our physical life is the vital world. This is the vital heaven. Many of our notions of heaven, which we have swarga, is in the higher vital. It is not the heaven of perfect knowledge or perfect consciousness. It's a heaven of perfect joy, ananda. So in a rippled sea of sky, sky is mind. The vital world moves, your mental being responds to that. Because in our mind we have the dream of a world of joy, of a world of peace, of a world of love, of harmony, of grieflessness. But this is why it is as if these islands of these wonderful emotions float in the sky of the mind. That is the higher world of Indra. Indra is the god of the mind, higher mind. So he gives a whole architecture of this magic world, towered spirals, magic rings of vivid hue, and gleaming spheres of strange felicity floated through distance like a symbol world. So you have this whole play of different modes of experience that we can have, different kinds of happiness. Just above the physical, there are vital worlds of happiness, there are worlds of emotions, there's a world of dream, there's a whole of world of hope. So it becomes hieratic, one above the other. Not just the physical enjoyment, not at all, be above it. So these spheres of strange felicity floated, strange felicity, because felicity is pure joy. We always want pure joy, joy that is unmixed. Unmixed by anything that is incomplete, imperfect, even on a lesser scale, something that is absolutely felicitous is perfect. So much so that if you have, you know how to use the perfect word when you know how to write beautifully and you choose the exactly perfect word, it is called felicity of style. It's absolute perfection. So that sense of perfection, which is what man basically needs, he always feels he's incomplete. There's an inadequacy. Things are not the way they should be. The feeling that we have to be more, you might say, capable of receiving a kind of a shower of blessing. We ask from the Divine, His grace, His blessing. It is always coming to us, but we don't receive it. Because we don't have the opening to be able to contain that continuous shower of joy, grace, blessing, harmony. We are blocked. Sometimes there are openings. It's like a fretted ceiling. Sometimes you get a touch, a feeling. So, this towered spirals, magic rings of vivid hues, colors. Colors indicate that the white light becomes the seven colors. The one becomes the many. Life is a play field of the many in all different modes of experience. It's not one singular concentration of consciousness. It's a play of all kinds of experiences. This is the world of the vital, perfectly beautiful on the higher level. So these images of strange felicity floated through distance like a symbol world. They tempt us, as if standing where I am, I have a dream of a world. And men have always had dreams like that. Someday there will be a perfect world. Someday we shall all live in harmony. But each one's notion of perfection and harmony that is different from another person's. It's not a satisfaction of possessing things, power or wealth. It is a satisfaction of being different. From within, the change has to come. Therefore, we have to work our way, we have to change our nature to become capable of getting in touch with that grace of love, of beauty and harmony that is always coming, given to us. On the trouble and the toil, they could not share. That is the thing. Because each one catches something of that joy of Ananda. On the unhappiness, they could not aid. Impervious to life's suffering, struggle, grief, untarnished by its anger, gloom and hate, these beings who live on this world do not feel unhappiness. They are untarnished, untouched. So it is like a world where these beings are untouched. Untouched by gloom, untouched by hate, untouched by imperfection, unmoved, completely undisturbed. So this is the middle world, above our life, physical world, where there is a possibility of becoming more than we are today. We can grow, we can change, we can develop. There is this middle world where these beings don't grow. They don't change. They don't need to, because on their own levels they are complete and perfect. When something is already perfect, it doesn't need to change. But it is not the highest perfection. It is on the field of life, at a particular level of the vital. They are absolute. Because they are absolute, they are untouched, undisturbed. They don't age. They don't diminish. They don't deteriorate. There is no death. Because death is of the body. They don't have a physical body. They have a form. But they don't have the density of material shape that where there's the wear and tear of life in the body. It is not there in the vital world. So there is a sense of permanence. These beings have always been inspirers for us, inspirer of living a life where there shall be no pain, no unhappiness, no grief. One of man's earliest dreams. He has always wanted this. He still wants them. But they don't aid. They don't help us to come out of these beings. Don't know how to help us come out of our difficulties, because they don't know what is a difficulty. They are themselves perfect. They don't know what is the reason why I am in pain. They don't understand pain. So they can't either help you, they don't harm you, they just are there like landmarks, like goals. They are therefore impervious to life's suffering, struggle, grief, untarnished by its anger, gloom and hate. They don't feel these things. In the vital world, we have all these feelings. We who are changing beings, we who are evolving beings, we feel anger, we feel hate, we feel gloom. We realize the consequence of feeling these things. We become crushed by them. This experience can become the starting point of change. For these beings, there is no change. They don't feel these things. They know only themselves. These gods know themselves. They don't know what we can feel. That is why they can't help you. They don't know what it means to suffer. They have never suffered. We call for help. These gods will not be able to help us. Untarnished by its anger, gloom and hate, unmoved, untouched, look down great visioned plains. They look down at us from above. As if they watch a world where there is longing, there is calling, there is aspiration, there is sense of dissatisfaction. Because our world is incomplete. Because we are incomplete, the sense of growing into something more complete is felt, which is actually a grace. It's a grace for us to realize that my insufficiency, I am incapable, I am insufficient, I have so many things lacking in me, they become starting points of change. I can therefore aspire to grow out of this. I can become somebody else slowly. These gods, these beings don't feel that. Impervious to life's suffering, struggle, grief, untarnished by its anger, gloom and hate, unmoved, untouched, look down, great vision planes, blissful forever in their timeless light. They are eternally blissful. They look down on from above at our life, where there is no bliss. Whatever joy we have is temporary. Whatever joy we have is a stepping stone for a greater joy. And the cause of it is because within us there is something that is lacking. We have to come out of it. There is change. This is the great blessing that has been given to man. He can evolve. He will evolve if he feels the need. He will not feel a need unless he has pain, unless he suffers. Then he says, no, this has to stop. I have to grow out of this. So there is this possibility of growth. These gods of these intermediary worlds don't grow. Absorbed in their own beauty and content, they're happy to be whatever they are. Of their immortal gladness, they live sure. They are forever the same. Whenever you look at them, they are the same. They don't age, they don't grow, they don't change. Apart in their self-glory plunged, remote, burning they swam in a vague, lucent haze. They are not absolutely the most brilliant beings in the universe. They are not. In their own world, in their own plane, they are complete and perfect. And they are happy with that. This is what happens. These are the lesser gods of the vital plane. They never suffer. They never yearn. So whether that is a blessing or not is for us to understand. If they could yearn for something, they would ask to change. Sometimes they do, as Mother tells us. Some of these gods are mystified by why man keeps on wanting to change. Then they recognize that in man, there is a asking for something higher, greater. He's not pleased or happy with the way he is. When they feel that, they want to become human beings. Some of these gods ask to come down on earth as human beings. If they come down as human beings, then they have to lose their godhead for the time being. They're willing to do that. They enter into the human journey. There is the journey of consciousness. It is not straightforward, but it is a field of many experiences, many changes, growth, fall, failure, starting again. So our journey is not continuous. We repeat the same circuit over and over again for a long time until we realize that we are not doing anything special. We have to grow out of the present into some future world of manifestation. But it, therefore, they live in this everlasting refuge of dream light. It is not a brilliant light. It is a projection of from a greater world. They are also projected from a world of a higher consciousness. An everlasting refuge of dream light, a nebula of the splendor of the gods. They are like the lesser gods, and they create a certain aura of light, of harmony, a nebula, not the burning core of the world of light, made from the musings of eternity. It is such a beautiful phrase. It is as if the divine creative consciousness in its own inner musings, in its meditation, projected some modes of expression which are born from the eternal. Therefore, these gods are eternal. But they are preliminary projections. They are the first early projections. There are physical gods, vital gods, who have their own perfection, who have their own joys. Almost unbelievable by human faith, hardly they seemed the stuff of things that are. As through a magic television's glass, outlined to some magnifying inner eye, they shone like images thrown from a far scene. He's using the term far sight, television, seeing from far. That's what it means. It's not what we call television, but the to see a world that it is a far sight. There are worlds like that also, in which there are beings who in themselves are complete, beautiful, harmonious, but small. They don't belong to the world of absolute greatness and light, which man in his journey can arrive at. Man can arrive at the higher planes. He can struggle, he can suffer, he can work his way out from below upwards. These gods remain where they are. As they are very nice. They don't feel pain for us. They don't see the human race as beings that need to suffer. They look at us as beings that are imperfect, whereas they are perfect. They are beautiful. Most of our gods, in many of our legends, all legends in fact, have these gods. When you speak of legends of the gods, you say Indian legends, Greek legends. These are beings. These are gods. They exist. They don't relate to human experience. They don't know what it is that man has to struggle his way from being one thing and he wants to become something else. He wants to grow. He wants to change. They would say, why do you want to change? Accept yourself to be How can man accept himself to be as he is? He's so incomplete. They don't understand this because they are not incomplete. In themselves, they are complete. In their little circle of manifestation, they are absolute. So they shine like images thrown from a far scene, too high and glad for mortal lids to seize. But near and real to the longing heart and to the body's passionate thought and sense are the hidden kingdoms of beatitude. This is the different part. In us are the kingdoms of the supreme ananda, of beatitude, near to the longing heart, near to our deepest aspiration, which is too high for mortal lids to seize. We can't even see those words. We can just dream of that world of the absolute beatitude, that world which we think is far away, but it is also near, because that world of perfect ananda is within us, is right inside us. So it is there in the body's passionate thought. It's a very unusual phase. The body asks for perfection. The body does not like aging, does not like sickness, does not like death. It dreams of a perfect world of possibility of manifesting life through the senses. These kingdoms of perfect beatitude are there. Each sense in us, there is a perfect sight. There's a perfect touch. There's a perfect taste. These conscious expressions are within us in our subtle body. We can feel them. Where that perfection is completely free of, you might say, change. So he says in the next line, immune from the harsh clutch of death and time. Whereas in our surface life, everything changes with time. But in that world of the perfect senses that are there in the body, that are there in our thought, we have conceptions of wonder and marvel and beauty. There is no change. There is a notion of perfection. So these kingdoms of beatitude are hidden inside us, in some close, unattained realm, which yet we feel, we can always feel them if we want to, if we choose to. Immune from the harsh clutch of death and time, escaping the search of sorrow and desire, because that will never give us that sense of perfection. Where there is desire, there is the sense of something that does not satisfy, no sense of finality. You want something, you run after it, you keep on chasing a desire, and by the time you reach it, your desire has changed. You want something else. These beings, these kingdoms of beatitude, don't change. They are immune from the harsh clutch of death and time, escaping the search of sorrow and desire in bright, enchanted, safe peripheries. Forever wallowing in bliss, they lie. They are always surrounded by happiness. This is perhaps the dream we have had in the world of life, to have a perfectly happy life. The world of the vital, because they are there.
तो भी स्टॉप करते हैं।